Well, good evening, everyone. So we have some new and some old returners and everything in between. So let's do introductions all the way around.
Yeah.
Ron.
Catherine.
Sarah.
Wendy.
Paul.
Jeffrey.
Ken.
Judy.
Karen.
Angie. So, Sarah, how did you hear about us?
My friend Marie Bienkowski told me about this group.
It's a good introduction.
Yeah.
Well, it may seem a little confusing, but I think you just follow along like you're, I always say, like you're dining with the Queen of England. You just follow it and look at what everybody else is doing and do that too. It works. So we're studying the precepts. Sunday we had a very, very wonderful ceremony at Jikoji. And Ying, our Chinese student who has been living at Jikoji and keeping things in some sort of coherent form up there in a wonderful way for some years. And she decided to take the precepts. And so we had a ceremony for that, a very, very simple ceremony. A lot of people came. She's now 7 months pregnant, so when she received the roksu, this bib like the one that Wendy is wearing, it rested right on the baby. Perfectly. So the precepts are very much in my mind. I gave a talk about the precepts, of course. And the first thing I always say is they're not rules and regulations. They are not any kind of instruction from the heavens telling you you better be a good person or you're punished for being naughty. It's nothing like that. It's just about how to stay awake, keep your eyes open, and see what's happening and figure out what you can do about it and just be as honest and clear about it in your own mind as you can be. That's all. So we have done in here, we've discussed the first three precepts: no killing, no stealing, and no sexual misconduct. So already you can see it's pretty interesting stuff. It's really, really basic. This is it. This is how we live. And either we live unconsciously and just go along with whatever it is, or we wake up. And the precepts help us to be awake and stay awake. Oh, this is what I'm doing. Look at that. I remember. Yes. Even in No Killing Life, you know, the earwig in the garden, what do you do about it? You really don't want it there. It's eating up your cabbages. However, Jeffrey's laughing. He's a gardener. But you pull up the carrot and you're killing it. Whatever you eat, you have killed. So it's a recognition of how it is with us in every aspect of our life. Oh, this is how it is. I see. Thank you, carrot. Thank you. So this one tonight And I hope you all have given it some consideration. The ones who knew we were doing this is called, in depending on who is calling it, Copen called it, and he said it was the actual translation of the Chinese. No illusory words. In this book, it's called Manifest Truth. In other words, don't lie. No telling lies. And we don't, with the precept, say, I promise I'm not going to tell lies, because that I is extra. It's saying no telling lies. Just like that. But it still means taking responsibility for our authenticity, to be honest. So it's a question of what is true. And of course it depends on every single mind what truth can be. Each mind has its own perspective. We can never nail down a truth because it's so constantly changing and there's so much depth and complexity to every single thing that we encounter. It looks simple from the outside, but once we begin to look inside and take things inside us, so things begin to look very, very dense and much more complex and much more interesting. If we sail through life on the surface, we miss all of that. So no telling lies is really about, in big part, like that. Staying awake to what comes out of our mouth, staying awake to what we hear from other people. In my own life, having the ridiculous position of speaking like this, and doing this quite a lot and for many years, I always have to think of this precept, because truly, whatever anyone says is a lie. You cannot nail the truth with a word. There is no way. It cannot be reached. And so, in a way, it's the most arrogant position to take. And also the most humbling, because as we say, even though you can't say it, you have to say something. In this practice, you really do have to say something at a certain point. Though silence is golden. So I know truth and lies is a big subject in our culture right now. Yeah. It's funny, but it's not funny at the same time. It's sort of scary how blatant this subject has become in our culture. And so it's a very interesting thing for us as people who practice and take our lives seriously to consider, how do we live in a world where the truth is not honored in the same way that we determine in our own lives to honor it. So this is your turn to bring your perspective on this, because everyone has experiences around this. Stories and stories about the lies I find that I tell, and then I think, oh, did I say that? And the lies that other people tell us, and how we cope with it. How we honor the truth. So tell me your truth. Judy.
And when I think about this precept, it reminds me of right speech. Mm. And so I guess I have to go back a little bit. For those of you who don't know me, I was diagnosed about last year with breast cancer. And so in the months after my diagnosis and while I was going through treatment and after my surgery and everything, people would ask me, how are you doing? Or how do you feel? And I struggle with answering because what do I say? Feel rotten. That might not be what people want to know about. And so to keep the conversation short, I just say, I'm okay, or doing fine, or as well as I can do. So I just try to keep it short. When I may not actually be feeling that way. So, I do, you know, it's a bit of a balance.
It
balancing
is.
Act.
It is.
I don't, you know, and it depends on the circumstance. So if I'm with a close friend who actually knows or can really knows what I'm going through, then I can open up a little more. But if I don't really know them very well, or we're in a situation where we can't really talk at length, then I may just give a short, kind of a curt answer that says, I'm okay, I'm here.
Yes. It's a very necessary lie.
Yes.
It is a lie in the, I guess, if you wanted to take it to court, you know, but it's very necessary to do those things. You're sparing people, for one thing. You know, you don't want to hurt people with your truth sometimes. And that's really important. You know, things are hard enough already. You know, you don't want to make it worse.
That's true.
Yeah. And people aren't very skillful around exactly that subject. Mm-hmm. It scares people, yeah. And they don't know what to do. And yeah, I just read advice on how to handle it, and the first advice was, don't ask how you are. It's not a good question to ask. Yeah, right speech. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Right?
Well, I won't say extreme, but less, perhaps, painful type example is, you know, the so-called white lie. Well, I was interested that you mentioned Colvin called this precept, no illusory speech, or no illusory words.
Right? No illusory words.
So, in other words, to me, it's saying that illusory words are ones where there's some lack of perception of the real nature of things, of the real situation, but the real situation may be complicated. For example, day-to-day social interactions or work, there may be somebody who really don't like that. They're a pain, you know, and annoying and so forth.
Somebody at work?
But are at work or wherever, you know, in many types of social situations, but then our practice teaches us to be kind to others, so we just can't say, you rotten blankety blank, I really hate you, or something like that. You know, we and maybe that's an illusory word anyway, because we're becoming so wrapped up in our own.
Yes.
If we were to really tell that truth, it would be violating all kinds of little precepts.
And that truth is
so,
your anger.
If I'm angry, you're defending, you know.
Yes.
Even if you maybe have many good reasons to feel that way, so no illusory words can be turned around, you know. Only real words, but those words may, they're going to vary, you know, with the situation sometimes. But the most important thing is try not to do any harm, you know.
That's one of the precepts.
Try to be compassionate and helpful. So it's not such a clear-cut thing as, why this is true. We always told the truth about something from a certain point of view.
Well, this precept wakes you up to your own reaction to what happens. And your challenge of figuring out what to say.
Try to say the right thing.
Yes, without flying off the handle.
You know, and be helpful and compassionate.
In the precepts, they say, in the Bodhisattva precepts, just put yourself in that person's shoes. That's the no being angry precept. It's the second to last one. So it's hopeless. Just like all the others, it's hopeless. We do get angry. But the question is, what do we do with it? You know, do we haul off and punch somebody? Or do we look into our own innards and check our own self out? What is this that it's what's being touched in me? And it's in me, not that person. It's really good information if somebody touches us in that way. Mm-hmm. Because it's something in us, usually some kind of wound, that wound our pride, maybe, or our self-confidence, or something about ourselves that we feel we need to protect. So it opens things up this way. All the precepts open things up in our own everyday life in just exactly this way. It's a great example. Yeah, thank you.
It's really difficult to, depending on the jobs that you have, not to lie by omission. I've had to write many, many hundreds of letters of recommendation as a teacher, and for colleagues and for students, and someone might, on balance, be recommendable, but they're... What I written, it is on a good day 3/4 true in one of the letters. And it's hard because there's a presentation in letters of recommendation as though you're painting a portrait of the person.
Mm-hmm.
And often some very prominent features are being left out of the portrait. So it would be like a portrait without a nose sometimes. That would be painted of this person, but then you have to do it.
Why do you have to do it?
Well, often the person is recommendable.
I see.
But
not perfect.
But not perfect.
Yes.
But part of the deception, no one can say anything about their imperfection, even if
I see.
If a personnel department makes a call, somebody could be litigated by
yes.
First, so it always is by omission. It's like the little catch in the voice, or the little an applicant mm-hmm. can be sunk by somebody on the other end of the phone hesitating or doing or leaving certain things out that are being it's
tricky business.
Yeah, and it's not entirely true. There's kind of an acceptable deception by omission.
And both sides know this.
Both sides know this.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of not even exactly a lie. It's kind of just a game.
With game
particular rules that go with the game that everybody
kind of
understands, even though
it's a game people are playing with truth.
But it's with truth, which is a little gnarly. That's very interesting. Yeah. Thank you. Paul?
I've been in situations in the jobs that I've had where I've had to tell people that it is illegal to give a recommendation for the very things he's talking about. You cannot, if someone calls you and says, what do you think of this person, say a thing. Just for insurance protection, litigation.
It's illegal.
You can't do it.
They throw you in jail if you do it.
Well, they probably sue you. But it's just not
fun.
Too many problems.
Yes, it just opens up a mess, right?
Just don't do it. So yes, he worked here. These are the times he worked here. He was laid off, what have you. And you would never say fired either. You'd say laid off.
Huh.
Again, it's the game. And they, in the interview process, would make up their own decisions.
Mm. Yes, face to face.
Yeah.
Which makes more sense anyway.
Can he ask if you would hire them again?
Nope. It's the same thing. Just different words.
I wish they couldn't be asked that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, I've been in the hiring situation a few times.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. I'm learning a lot. It's so interesting. Jeffrey?
Well, it's also messy, isn't it? I was thinking also in this precept about how we turn the light within, and we might want to look at the lies we tell ourselves.
Oh, yes.
One of the insights, especially through the perceptual lens, is we easily see how others tell themselves lies.
Mm-hmm.
You can be in any situation, dinner party, faculty meeting, whatever,
yes.
And you can begin to hear, Really?
Yeah.
Okay. But what I find very helpful is the unfolding of all the lies that I, about myself perhaps, accepted through family, culture, mm-hmm. all these things. So I do think that in this precept, well, it seems to be prominently featuring how we, what we say with words or with actions. It's also, it can be looked at from another point of view, where we can look at ourselves in terms of the lies and untruths we say about ourselves.
Absolutely. The whole thing is how we work with our own mind. You know, it's just thoughts. And whether we line up our thoughts with as much truth and honesty as we can, or whether we're always working to throw up clouds of pink smoke in front of us so that we can kind of protect ourselves. And we do a lot of that because we think we need to be protected, and we think we're special in some way, that we need protection, or that we're so weak and helpless that we need it, and the world is dangerous. And so a lot of that self-talk is about my own protected situation. And we tell our own story to ourselves over and over. Well, this is me, and this is what happened, and this is how. And much of that is just incredibly distorted because we don't know. Actually, we don't know what happened. Our mind immediately starts changing it. It alters whatever we remember, so it's not the same. I always tell people that I kept a journal. I keep a journal, and I've kept it for many years. And every time there was an argument in my family about what happened, I would say, oh, I'll look it up. And I would look it up, and man, oh man, I never remembered it the right way. I'd written it all out. But it turned into a whole nother story in my mind. We do that. They've measured it now. So we can't trust ourselves in that way. It's pointless.
Another thought, I was listening to Judy and thinking about I'm involved in a group up in Redwood City, which is a group about this size of people dealing with aging, illness, and death. And I was thinking, Judy, how in that group, because we're all coming from, and we're all meditators, how comfortable it is to talk about what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And much as, hopefully, those of us who sit in this group similarly feel at ease and comfortable about talking about the things we talk about.
Yes.
And how communities, your friends, you know, the groups that we meet with, where we're able to express ourselves in the most honest and authentic terms,
right,
are so important. Which just really gives rise to that question about what's happening in Washington and
mm-hmm.
how authentic any of that appears to us.
Yes.
I mean, it's, you know, I think because we're really training hard in this process, we smell out and hear easily the fabrication that's going on right now in this mm-hmm. world.
Well, having safe spaces, I think, is a really good point. That it And it's wonderful to be able to find a safe space where, like this, where we can be together long enough that we can begin to share things that are closer to the heart and the bone. And it's true, as Judy said, you just don't say things to anybody. It doesn't compute in the same way. So it takes, what do they call it, skillful means, just to figure it out every time. But that's really right. It's a gift to find a place where you can safely speak your own mind and be your own self and not have to feel a little at risk in some way. Yeah. Paul?
So, what do I tell my wife who doesn't meditate?
It's what?
So what do I tell my wife?
Yeah.
Who doesn't meditate?
Oh.
How open?
Yes. Well, yes. Having a practice.
I'd like to be more open.
But there are some, I know exactly what you mean. I
spent, I received.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you don't. Then you just and find other places for it. You have to. You have to find other places. Doesn't always work out the way you want it to. Yeah. We're here.
That's why I come.
Glad you come. It's a gift. It's time?
Yep. Exactly.
It's just getting strange. Announcements?
I can't think of anything. Really?
What's happening at Chikoji?
Everything.
Oh.
We're getting ready in about a month. There's going to be a 4-day Sashin Genzo A. with Kokyo?
Yes.
From Santa Cruz?
Yes.
We'll be studying, I know it, hang on, Dogen's Gabyo, which is a painting of a rice cake, which is a short little, I don't know if it's a sutra, it's a short little Dogen piece.
It's a chapter in Shogo again, so,
yes.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. It appears in a number of places. You can find it on the website.
Right.
This Saturday is our work practice day, starting at 8 o'clock with breakfast, and there'll be lunch served, and we'll be building some walls. They're just doing work around the campus, and everybody, all and everyone is invited to be there and pull up weeds or maybe do some silent painting or something.
Yeah.
So.
Good. Good. It's absolutely beautiful up there right now.
It's
so pretty. Everything is green. The apple tree is in bloom. It's just so lovely. On Sunday there was a little gale a downpour and a big wind.
It was actually raining this morning, and by the time I left around noonish or so, the sun was out.
It's all clearing up now.
It clears up and
yes.
It's bad again. And
yeah.
It's really quite wonderful.
Right. And Kokyo is a wonderful teacher. A great scholar. He's a real scholar. So that's. I keep thinking I will try to go there myself.
It was nice having you on Sunday.
Oh, thank you.
Angie, I saw a very nice article today on Tricycle. Michael.
Yes.
Our Michael Newhall.
Jigoti Michael.
Mm-hmm.
All about his painting.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, a really fine article.
Where's the article? There's a link to it.
On Tricycle.
It's online, I believe. I can send you the link if you like and send it out or look better.
Well, if I would just go to the website, current issue.
Yeah. Michael's website is full of his paintings, too. Yeah. Well, let's have our 1 minute sit.